The parallel economy has empowered us to care for our health, well-being, as well as longevity. Likewise, for us pet parents who now have a place to go when it comes to keeping the family dogs, cats, even horses in the best shape possible. As a dog dad, I'm thrilled to be working with Pet Club 24/7, a company founded by two guys who lost dogs to serious conditions, including cancer. Pet Club 24/7 has an incredible array of products, including a line of supplements for humans, such as the Inforce Plus Corollius Versicolor and Inforce Corollius Versicolor with Reishi. My friend and colleague, Christina Ferrari, a cancer survivor herself, swears by it.
When I was diagnosed, the doctor in the emergency room told me, "You have 2 years to live."
Oh boy.
Along with the stem cell, I took these. I have been in remission for 8 years now.
For dogs, mush puppy treats are a fan favorite. Rex, you want to? Oh boy. He came right. Oh, there he is. They are also made with the Coriolis versicolor mushroom, which supports their immune system, according to hundreds of clinical studies. Here's Kristen Ludlow, National Vice President.
That strain does matter. We do have the most potent strain, and we also extract it in a proprietary way. And that's why we've been having such wonderful experiences with these products.
Mush puppies are made here in the U.S. There are no fillers. It's non-addicting. Your dog can't accidentally overdose. Go to drdrew.com/petclub247 for a discount off the list price. That is drdrew.com. PETCLUB247, Pet Club 247.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in this podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the iPad because it's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
And we have a very special guest.
My favorite guest.
I'll let you do the intro.
Hero, Pamela DeBars, Miss Pamela. The
Hi.
Person I spent New Year's Eve with.
It wasn't that fun.
It was so great.
It was so different, right?
Yeah.
It was a very unique way to spend New Year's Eve.
Well, there's two. We're going to talk about all this because I've thought about it all day.
Okay.
So, but just a beacon of love and encouragement in the LA music community forever.
Well, so to that end, let me.
She has right?
New, thank you.
She has a new podcast, Miss Pamela's Pajama Party.
Yay!
And you have Groupie Therapy.
Well, that's my writing workshops.
Tell me about that.
I teach women's writing memoir all over the country and now Toronto and London too. And just encouraging women to open up and share their lives with each other and write it out. And it's been so cosmic. It's been the best thing I've ever done.
And she wrote the original memoir. What year did it come out, the first book?
86 in hardback and 87 in paperback, when it became a bestseller.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was that time, just to talk about the time that why for a year I wanted to have you on the show, because Drew blames the 70s for everything, and you and I love the 70s, so we're going to get at it.
Actually, I'm a 60s girl. I'm a 60s
girl. 60s, I can go more. I can sign off much more than the 70s.
Now, why don't you like the 70s? The hard drugs?
Selfishness?
No, I feel like it just everything went off the rail after 1968, 69. It just became, hey, whatever you're into, man. Including if it's something horrible, and then you shouldn't consider anybody
heroin.
Else.
Yeah, well, hard drugs.
Child abuse, child sexual abuse of children, acting out on one another any fashion you desire, and without
that was in New
these
York.
These things
Drew.
Didn't happen to me.
That
okay?
wasn't in L.A. That what? Was you, one of the things that you're prejudiced against. That weird thing where all those hairy people were having sex in New York, Pluto's Retreat. That's what you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about what people did to each other, and they were being encouraged. If you read Christopher Lasch's The Culture of Narcissism, which he wrote in the mid-70s, his thing was there was a culture whereby people were not supposed to concern themselves with other people's – the impact of their behavior on other people at all. Just whatever you're into is what's good, and that's the value. And if it hurts somebody else, that's their problem. They're letting it hurt them.
You understand?
Well, now we have the opposite.
I know. Yeah, trust me.
Everybody's a victim.
I'm not super happy with it now either, but I say it all unraveled after
the
70s.
I think it's worse now. And what you're talking about stemmed from the 60s when we all got our freedom, right?
Right. Right. And I think that this is on my own.
People didn't know what to do with their freedom.
I did. I certainly knew what to do with it.
Yeah.
But some of that.
And I didn't hurt anybody.
But think about there were, to me, there were three sources of that freedom. One was financial. Things were the post-World War II boom was in full swing. We had some freedom. Two, antibiotics. A urinary tract infection would have killed you in 1920. So sex carried a death sentence. Chlamydia, pelvic inflammatory disease, you're dead.
Really?
Absolutely. So all STDs.
Lucky for us.
Yeah, I know.
Syphilis, dead. If you got tertiary syphilis, I mean, there was no treatment for STDs.
Economics, antibiotics,
and then birth control.
The birth control pill. I used to take it in public view, man. I was so proud of it. I would, the little round plastic thing, I'd pop it open right in front of the whiskey.
But think about it.
Look what I'm doing, baby.
But for the first time, that's the first time in human history women could take control. In the history of humanity, women could take control of this.
Of course. Yeah. I was right in the thick of it.
Yeah. That's people don't think about it. We're unmoored, and you're trying to figure out what that means now. What does that freedom mean?
At that time, sure, because I came from the 50s, of course, growing up. I'm 70 now. I watched my mom just totally take care of my dad. He came first, you know, everything he wanted done was done. And I felt, I liked that, though, because I observed it in a positive way.
Oh, see, I thought you would have been rejecting of that.
No, it worked for them. So I thought, well, I would like to do that, only I would like to do that with someone who plays the guitar or, you know, who moves me in that way, sings, whatever, some band member. Because I love, you know, Elvis, then the Beatles, and of course, I was the right age for all that. So that's what I wanted. I wanted to take care of a rock guy the way my mom took care of my dad. But then, of course, things blossomed and changed when I had my own girl band and I got a lot more self-confidence.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, so one of the things I always think of is the music that you grew up with. I mean, she was a part of things that you just know what happened afterwards.
Yeah.
She was there when it was beginning to happen.
I know.
There's a man named Graham Parsons. He invented a genre of music. One person.
Yeah.
Right? She was there. Right?
I was, yes.
And one of the things that I like to think about is he had the luxury of being what I was too, which is a trust fund kid. So he didn't have to worry about making money off of music.
You were a trust fund kid?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
I did not realize that.
I still get a check.
Oh my God!
Yay!
Oh my God!
I would love to be.
But you know what I'm saying?
I always
couldn't figure out how to pay for all those rehabs.
Your dad, who we're shitting on all the time.
No, I love my dad.
Who've been taking care of you all these years?
No, the nursing home company.
Oh, okay, right. Got it.
So, but Graham Parsons said, "I love George Jones. I love Merle Haggard. I love the Rolling Stones. I love the Beatles. I'm going to be an alchemist and mix them together."
And he loved soul music.
Yes.
He incorporated that too.
And the first thing that he did really didn't hit the mark. I know you were a part of the Burrito Brothers.
Well, the International Submarine Band was his first
Grievous one. Angel comes out, that invents a genre of music that you know as the Eagles, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The most popular strand of classic rock there is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you were there, and I just always wondered, is it because he didn't have to worry about making money?
It had a lot to do with that, but that's also what killed him.
What?
Well, he had enough money to buy as many drugs as he wanted.
You know he died of drug addiction?
Oh,
yes,
he had all five drugs in his system. Yeah.
but he was so important.
How come you weren't there? How come you didn't go to the desert with him and save him, Pamela?
When he saved
him several times, I'll bet.
But when he got that far gone, I just didn't want to be around. It was killing me to see him like that.
How long? And he had progressed to getting like that?
Yeah.
He's probably one of the greatest geniuses who ever lived.
Yeah. He would sit people down. He sat me and Mercy down, my GTO friend, demanding that we listen to George Jones, Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, Ray Price, Willie, and he made us sit there.
And these are like hippie girls in Laurel Canyon.
Yes. We were. And then we revered him so much and adored him. We said, okay, we'll listen. Because I thought they were just crew cut assholes, you know.
Right.
And I,
rednecks.
But, yeah, and, yeah. But I was. I was so expanded by this. I owe so much to Graham just for that, for turning me on to George Jones, man. And it was the most expansive.
Were you there when he made Grievous Angel?
I was at Burrito Sessions.
Right.
My time with Graham was mainly at so Burritos. But I did see rehearsals of the Grievous Angel, and I did see him sing with Emmy Lou. But my time with him was in the Burritos.
Yeah, in the beginning. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And so she's there. Then she's the beginning of Led Zeppelin. Then she's there when the Rolling Stones become good, because I have this theory that the Rolling Stones became good when Keith Richards became heroin.
I think that may be associative, not causational.
They were the best with Mick Taylor.
Yes, that's when it is.
And that's when
it
I was hanging out with him, yes.
Right. So the history of rock right here.
And not to mention Beefheart and Zappa.
Yeah, Beefheart.
The beginning. I met Beefheart in high school. That was the most life-altering thing that ever happened
to me. I didn't know Beefheart is.
Captain Beefheart made a record called Trout Mask Replica in 1968. That's a masterpiece, a forethought.
It's always on the list.
It's a forethought of what's to come.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so far ahead that he was behind. You know what I mean?
They thought he was mentally ill.
But I was his fan club president for the Valley chapter in 1965.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I was altered way before I started taking drugs by him.
By his vision of things? Was he mentally ill, you think?
No. I don't think he was mentally ill. He just thought differently than everyone else. What? Were you giving a look?
He's a visionary, Drew.
A total visionary. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He had a vacuum cleaner. A vacuum cleaner.
And he
said, this has a great sound.
Yeah. Well, Frank Zappa did, too.
Yeah.
And I was very, very early with those characters.
Was as much sex as people think going on? I don't think it was as much sex.
You know, I just had the most revelatory experience. I thought that I'd probably slept with a couple hundred people.
Right.
I mean, I lived during that time, and I was very free-spirited.
But turns out you didn't.
Not at all. I mean, I saw the number that Michael was, my ex-husband,
yeah.
Right? And I went, oh, my God, I'm a virgin compared to what I thought I was.
That's good.
I was really surprised.
Yeah, my mom.
Compared to people I knew.
But again, maybe that was the cultural environment where you're already being made to feel guilty for any activity.
I never felt guilty about anything.
But
my mom was
honestly,
there.
I did not. Yeah. I did not.
My mom was there, too. My mom lived with Cass at the Stanley House, whatever, right? And she said, I thought I slept with everybody. And then later on when she was doing a look back in her life, she was like, I didn't really sleep with as many people as I thought I did.
Exactly. And I was really stunned.
What
wow, good for me. I'm not going to tell the number.
It wasn't 200.
Way less than 200.
Nowhere near 200. Nowhere near it. Okay, so it was like, wow.
I think that's one of the myths of rock and roll, is that there's sex going on all the time. In my generation, there wasn't.
Well, there was. I witnessed a lot of it, and I have friends who did sleep with 1,000 people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wilt Chamberlain? Your friends with Wilt Chamberlain?
There were a lot of orgies. There were a lot of people sleeping with several people a night. I never.
That's crazy.
I was too much of a lover. I wanted to be in love.
Individual.
I wanted to be in love, right. And I never, ever.
But that extreme activity sounds like drug addiction and bipolar and that kind of stuff. That's where the extreme behaviors
go. No, well, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was also the era. Just do what you want. Like you were mentioning, you know, just do whatever you want. But, I mean, I didn't want to ever hurt anyone. And people I knew.
See, if you didn't care, you could hurt a lot of people.
Well, here's, Pamela, this is an interesting thing happened to me. When I started to make records and be on the road, I you know, you think that's going to happen. And when it does, you're kind of just kind of thinking, like, I can't believe that
you
just
mean
happened.
Groupies? You mean
yeah,
groupies?
Well, gal pals.
No, groupies.
So I slept, I slept with this girl, I remember, in Minnesota. And the next morning I was at her house, and this is early on in my career. And I remember her saying, we have a bunch of mutual friends. And I said, oh, my God, who? And she named two other singers of other bands from L.A. And I remember just thinking, oh, my God.
She
does this with everybody. And that ended my groupie stuff. And I became a girlfriend guy. I'm serial monogamist. It's called, once I got to therapy, it's called serial monogamy.
That's what I am too. Yeah, I always have been. Only, you know, I was very young and I thought I was in love with all these different people. Like my list of my first five people or six is amazing. I mean, my first lover was Nick St. Nicholas from Steppenwolf, who I'm still very friendly with. Second was Noel Redding, Jimi Hendrix
bass
experience.
Player.
Third was Chris Hillman.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No wonder you were around the Burrito Brothers.
Long.
He's the other guy in the Flying Burrito
Brothers.
Yeah,
that was a long, long, long-term relationship.
Was it?
Yeah. And fourth was, I guess it was Jimmy Page, and then Mick Jagger. This was my first five people.
Wow. That she slept with.
Because I was in that world.
What's going on with Mick Jagger? You hear anything today?
Nah. He's an
with
old,
who?
He's an old
no,
guy.
No, Mick Jagger, they canceled their tour. He's got health issues. Yeah, something's going on.
Oh, my God. I hope not.
He's a
so
businessman,
inspiring.
Too. He
doesn't
cancel shit for nothing unless it's serious.
No, he does not. And he's very, very smart. And he never got out of line with drugs.
No, never.
Everyone around him did. Same with Robert Plant. He never got out of line with drugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you try to save some people from drugs?
Oh, yeah.
How'd that go? not very well, I'm thinking.
Well,
it normally goes great, Bob.
Well, I think I was a good influence on my ex-husband, Michael.
Right.
Yeah. I think I was a real good influence. I think I was a good influence on some people.
Right.
Not on everyone.
So once Graham starts going off the deep end with heroin, you just thought, I can't watch that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to be around that.
Well, he was on everything. Yeah. It wasn't
But that shows she's not codependent. She's not trying to save him.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Not trying to save him. He's just like, nobody can save him. I just can't watch it. Because what happened with him is, at a time when he should have been the performer that he was 2 years before, he couldn't even perform.
Yeah.
There's tapes of him singing concerts live on the radio where he can't even sing. It's crazy how high he must have been.
And his voice was so beautiful.
So beautiful. Yeah. And when he died, he had morphine, cocaine, pot, barbiturates, and alcohol in his system.
Yeah. Wow.
Top five of the day.
Yeah.
I remember
1973.
I remember reading. Didn't have benzos yet. How did you hear about it?
A friend called me, and it wasn't a surprise.
It wasn't a surprise.
No. It was last time I actually saw him. He was standing at the Troubadour on the phone when they used to have a phone in the lobby.
Yeah.
And he was trying to find his dealer. He was just, and he was so. I wrote in, I'm with the band, that his hands were the most beautiful things, and beautiful hands I've ever seen. And they were long. I mean, and one time he actually was looking at him. He came to the GTO session, and he said, I don't know. I expect to see stitches around my wrist. I have no idea where they came from. I mean, his hands were that beautiful. Oh. But in I'm with the band, I said, his hands were hanging beside him like forgotten flowers.
Mm. So sad. And how fast a period of time? Three years?
He was 26, you know.
Yeah, I know. But how far from when he was a high-functioning person till that moment? 3 years?
Couple years.
Yeah. They go down that fast.
Yeah, a couple years. Because
again,
he had the money to get whatever he wanted.
And then no consequences. And people didn't really understand what this was back
And there was
then.
No rehab?
They didn't understand what this was. Hey, it's just him. He's just the heroin addict guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, you were with another heroin addict who ended up, you know, making seven in a row of the greatest albums ever made.
Are you talking about
Jimmy Page? Yeah.
Well, he was an off and on heroin.
Oh, was he really only off and on?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't,
my God.
It wasn't consistent.
You learn something new every day. I tell you the story. So I read Keith Richards' life book.
Yeah.
Did you read it? Nah, you weren't interested in it. So in one point, he's talking about shooting up, and he's talking about intramuscular, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why would he do that? And then I'm just skimming around, and it turns out that's all he ever did. He never shot drugs the way that I and Perry and Anthony and the next generation did.
Yeah.
Never mainlined.
Wow, really? I don't know.
That's incredible. What does that mean?
To get the rush, shooting in his muscle as opposed to shooting
in the vein.
Okay.
That's how the old jazz people did it. You know, one of the things that in the history of dope, which is yours is groupies, mine's dope.
Okay.
So Billie Holiday,
because he did it that way. Because we always say that he...
Yeah, that's why he could survive 25 years of doing it like that. Keith Richards. Oh, yeah. Right?
Not that we want to promote that.
We don't
want to promote that. You know, let's change the subject. He said Mick Jagger had a small dick. Do you remember when he said that?
You're going to tell me he doesn't.
No, he does not. But I'm telling you.
I'm so glad to find that out. Keith, I always figured he did have a big dick.
No,
so.
Keith.
Mick Jagger?
No, he has a regular dick. But I'm telling you.
It's not small.
No. And Keith put it out to the world that he... Mick had a small dick.
You can see that Miss Pamela is firmly in the Mick Jagger camp of the Richards camps.
Yeah.
I'm in the Keith Richards camp.
He was always great to me. Mick Jagger was always great to me.
Because they were having big fights. Yeah. They broke up.
Yes, but he said that. I mean, that's something you don't announce to the public, even if that was true. Right? I mean, so
Drew would.
See, he's a heroin addict and he's pissed.
Yeah, he's going to go.
Mick was never an addict of any kind.
Yeah. Maybe no, but him. Keith Richards is just going to go nuclear. Right?
Well, I actually had to set it straight. I got so much publicity. This was probably, you know, when the book came out.
Right.
And I had a publicist friend, and she put it out there that I said that was absolutely false. And I got so much
press
out of that.
That's the best press.
I bet Mick was very happy with me.
I bet.
To come into his male defense his manhood. Defended his manhood.
Yes, that's right.
In a literal sense.
But correct. Let's go back to Led Zeppelin, because those guys concern me, right?
It's
a group.
So when Led Zeppelin, Drew read the book Hammer of the Gods.
Correct.
It was a bad mistake, because now he just thinks they're the worst people in the world.
Right. I wonder why.
Why did Richard Cole? Well, that's written by Richard Cole.
Why did he? By me too.
Why did he exaggerate Led Zeppelin's amoral behavior?
Or did he?
He didn't exaggerate it.
C-Bob.
He did.
He did.
No,
he did, Pamela.
Then why aren't they being? Why aren't they being extradited and put in prison in this country?
They didn't. I was never on the receiving end of that stuff. Jimmy treated me with amazing respect. I was one of his girlfriends, you know, and those stories were never about Jimmy, Robert, or John Paul Jones. Mm. It was Bonzo and the Roadies. That's it.
Oh,
band did not participate in any of that really sleazy stuff.
The drummer she's talking about died at 29 of alcoholism.
31. Wow. Yeah.
And that's hard. If you're a lifetime drinker from 13 to die of alcoholism.
Oh, yeah, it's rough.
I mean, that's Bon Scott territory.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, yes, Jimmy was with, I think a lot of them were with underage girls, but it was different at that time.
I know. Doesn't matter, though.
No, those girls that I knew, Sable and Lori, and those girls, really proud of their history and glad they did that.
Now.
To this day.
To this day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to tell you that the other day. You know,
we were discussing it while I fell asleep.
Well, I can put him to sleep so easily with my.
But she was trying. You still didn't. You changed my view a little bit.
How about just look at it this way? A 17-year-old girl in 1975 is a lot more mature than a 17-year-old girl in 2019. I believe
it's a different kind of maturity. It's a whole other level. We can't even compare those 50 years
ago. So you've been a mentor to women over the last three decades. What do you say to women who come to your writing thing and they want to work out their issues of what happened to them?
They write it out. A lot of them are writing memoirs and doing so well with expressing that stuff.
Don't they generally start to think a little less idealized of these events as they write it out? It looks a little more.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes
that's
they
what
do.
I would think.
Yeah.
That's what I would
sometimes
think.
They do.
Because they're being exploited.
No way.
Well, those young girls we're talking about.
They wanted to be there.
No, I get that, but
they put themselves there.
No, but just the way a 15-year-old wants to be with her teacher. They wanted to be with the teacher.
These guys did not chase after these young girls.
The teacher didn't chase after that 15-year-old. She pushed herself on him.
Yeah, but that's a teacher.
Rodney Bingenheimer's club was Bacchanalia. I mean, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And, you know, I love Rodney.
Yeah. It was called.
But that's where most of that stuff went. That's where
they met those
girls.
The younger kids.
That's where they met those kids. And, you know, when that started happening, I was out of there. It was like 73-4. Luckily, I met Michael in 74, and it was time
How
to get out.
How old were you?
How old was I when?
When that started happening.
I was 19 and a half before I got my first
taste
of Nirvana.
Okay. So,
I'm so, all for sex, man.
But so how do you mentor young women nowadays? There's a different mentality, right?
Well, through the writing. I have 18 to 84 in my classes. I know. I see your website.
All the teaching. She goes all over the country and teaches.
It's amazing.
And it's liberating and it's freeing to tell your story and your narrative. It's almost like a therapy.
And not feel guilty.
Yeah. And share.
Do you tell them
in a room where other women have been through the same kind of thing, had the same kind of feeling? Oh, I understand what that. Oh, okay. And then it lessens whatever the
load
angst
is,
was. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very healing thing. And
totally.
Yeah, but there must be some people that come to you that are very angry and they want to remain angry and feel victimized, right? Or no?
No, I have a certain energy that I draw a certain type of people to me. If you read I'm with the band, it's a very uplifting story. It's not.
Yeah, it is.
Even though I've had my heart broken over and over. Mm-hmm. And, and my second memoir is also uplifting, even though my marriage broke up, my father dies and all that stuff. And people relate to it, though. It's very human stuff, but I don't go down the wicked rabbit hole ever. I never. That's just my nature anyway.
So is it safe to say in all the rock icons that you knew, like I'll just go down the list, Jim Morrison, Gram Parsons, Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, Mick Jagger, those are solid people? You think they're caring people?
Hang on. We have to take a quick break.
Oh, my God.
We'll have you answer when we get back. Well, CBDs are everywhere, right? Everyone's talking about them, and it's a topic that I get asked about all the time. Bottom line on CBD, although there are way more claims made about them, the clinical evidence right now, it's not all that clear, but many people are using it and reporting great results, and they are very encouraging. So I want to first define exactly what I'm talking about here. CBD is cannabidiol, an extract from hemp. While you might associate with marijuana, CBD does not cause reinforcement. It is not the reinforcing component of hemp, but it is what's responsible for the calming or some of the relaxing effects that many people experience, not the high. Now about the products. There are a ton of them on the market today. Forgetting the vast array of the reported health benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards, not the hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is described to you so you can make an informed decision without all those promises that are probably too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD by individuals using this are very compelling. I'm excited to see how things develop as the science catches up with this booming industry. As usual, the public is ahead of the science. I can't make explicit claims yet, but boy, the reports are pretty encouraging. So if you're ready to try CBD, I encourage you to check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That's on my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. And for a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout with the code DrDrew, DrDrew. Again, drdrew.com/select, and then the code DrDrew. And we're back.
That was a teaser.
So
you're getting good at this, Drew.
I'm passing by Jim Morrison. Was he a caring person? But go ahead.
Well, Jim Morrison, when he wasn't drinking, was a sweetheart. But he turned into a monster when he drank, like Bonzo also did.
Right. And so you see alcoholism as causing a lot of the bad things that you hear about these people's behavior.
Yeah, I think alcohol was worse than drugs in a lot of ways back then. Because I saw it alter people. Cocaine's the devil too. Mm-hmm. I saw it alter people. I knew them both ways. So I was not a big fan.
Jim Morrison was an army brat, right? He went around the army his whole life.
But he really truly was a poet. He wanted to be seen as a poet. He saw the whole rock star thing as a short lived lark.
Did you think it was a dead end street?
He just didn't
he certainly did it the best of anybody.
I know.
But you have to remember,
he invented the icon rock star, and he thought it was like, I think it'll last a few months.
Yeah, he really did.
But you got to remember, in the 50s, the writer was the rock star of the day. right? Writers were elevated above
Norman Mailer
else.
And yeah,
poets especially.
Elvis was,
well, but J.D. Salinger and I mean in New York City.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Writing was that was how you distinguish yourself.
They were even on talk shows then. They don't have them on there anymore.
So just, this is something that I know. The iconic figure of Jim Morrison with leather pants and no shirt on.
Right.
Gloria Scott, who you knew, the drug counselor from Venice, I think. Michael was friends with her. Uh-huh. She was my mentor and saved me and a bunch of people. She was friends with him and said he only looked like that for like about 4 months when he was on Speed.
then he gained a bunch of weight.
No, that's
I mean, but is that an exaggeration?
Yes.
But he only
looked like that for about a year and a half.
But before that, he was a stocky UCLA kind of kid, right?
Yeah, well, he was cute, though. Come on.
But yeah, cute face, but he was not thin as a rail, rock star icon.
No, and he wasn't really a speed freak either. I was hanging out with him in the early days.
Okay, early days.
Well, he was a kid. He was
a kid.
So
he had baby fat on him?
No, he was a sleek kid. He was a kid.
He was?
Yeah, when I knew him, he was 20, 21, 22. It was early days, first album, and that was his most beautiful time.
Yeah, he was.
But in Hollywood, since I lived there, I was one of the people who would step over him in the gutter because he became that.
Right by the country store? Because he lived behind the country store,
right? Yeah,
he did,
but right
How
in front
fast
of,
did that happen?
Well, two, three,
he was
four
dead
years.
He was dead in 4 years,
so it had to have been... Yeah.
Like from the time their album comes out till he dies is 4 years, Drew.
Oof.
How crazy is that?
But it was alcohol. It was alcohol.
Right. But a friend of mine.
He was never a big drug head or anything. It was alcohol. So we just saw him get fat and miserable and bloated and bearded and
angry.
Mean. Yeah.
Would he be mean
to
you? No one was mean to you.
He was mean to me.
Really?
But he wasn't in his right mind. I never blamed him because I knew him, the real one. And then I'd see the guy on alcohol.
Okay, so he set the iconic thing that Perry and Anthony and Iggy Pop and everyone else are trying to reenact is Jim Morrison, right? The other thing is that just that rock musicians need to get skinny. The idea, the iconic thing of a musician being skinny, that's what Scott Weiland had an eating disorder. A lot of guitar players do. A lot of guitar players. Because the icons that you're thinking of are Jimmy Page in 1975, right?
Right.
So I eventually, unlike Pamela, I don't get to meet them when they're 20, but I meet them eventually, and I'm always shocked by how short they are.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the
and
Brits,
I'm thinking, it's
the
easy
British
to be
guys.
Fucking skinny when you're 5'3".
Yeah.
They're not that little.
No, but 5'6" or something.
Jimmy and Robert are both pretty tall. Mick's about 5'8". It's probably about 5'7".
Yeah.
That's small. That's small.
Now?
It's small.
Yeah.
Compared to
well,
American
Noel
standards.
Well, Noel Redding and Mitch Mitchell were little midgets. I mean, some British guys were midgets.
It was, it's a weird thing. It's the British rock star, and they're all under 6 feet tall.
Mm. Oh, way under. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard to be skinny if you're 6 feet tall.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Right?
Different.
Scott was like six foot one.
Yeah.
And he was starving himself to look like those guys.
Ugh.
Yeah,
right?
He was
on
really
top
good.
Of the drugs, then he's got anorexia.
Yeah.
You and forgot that I was the Foxy Lady with Jimi Hendrix in the first video.
Were you?
Yeah.
Were you on the Naked album cover?
No. I was too young to do that.
Really?
I was 17 when I danced in the Foxy Lady video.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
When he lived in Laurel Canyon,
and he hit
too,
on
right?
me, and I was like, ooh, I never met anyone like him ever, and I never will again, I'm sure. But I did wind up with Noel Redding.
Right.
So and I was a virgin, though. And in those days, they waited. I said, I'm not ready.
Rock stars waited,
yes!
Drew.
I'm taking notes.
No.
It's the 60s, man. The 60s
are
good.
60s.
No waiting
said,
in the 70s.
That's my point.
I'm
just not ready, Noel, you know. And we hung out and saw each other. Of course, I performed various other
things. Yeah, yeah,
right,
of course.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was hanging on to my virginity for, you know, for the right person. But I saw him, for instance, a lot of these guys I saw for years. I saw Noel for years often, whenever they came to town.
Right.
He even flew me to New York, which turned me into a super groupie.
And really? So, when you get flown?
And so did Jimmy Page. Yeah. Because
commercial or in a private jet?
It was commercial then. They didn't have their jet yet.
I'm just trying to paint the picture here.
trying to fantasize
if they
what that life is like.
First class. If they took you on the road, it meant that person who they were going to see there, they weren't going to see.
Right.
So you were a super groupie.
Super groupie. So there were only three or four, I think.
There was a handful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like super groupie was just somebody's girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
Drew has a way of cutting to the chase. Right?
Yeah. Well, I was with Keith Moon off and on. I say off and on because most of them lived in England.
Yeah.
Right. I did see Mick in England, but.
So they didn't mind that you saw the other rock stars in between?
Oh, God. Mick tried to tell me. Oh, Mick was after me for the longest time because I was being true to Jimmy. I was always true to whoever I was with. And Mick kept saying, he's not being true to you, though. I said, but he is. He told me, he's on the road. He's not doing anything. And and finally, when I found out that he was not being true to me, that's when I did say okay to Mick. But you know, anyway, it's in the book.
It's a fun life.
Yes, it was a truly fun life, but it still
is. Do you
have
regrets? You don't have regrets, do you?
I only have regrets for things I did not do that I could have done.
Like make a second record?
Oh, no, I couldn't have done that.
Why?
Frank broke the group up because they were on drugs. Oh. Frank was a
only
teetotaler.
One of them was on drugs.
Frank.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which Frank?
Frank Zappa.
Zappa, yeah.
I was
but
not
was he?
Drugs.
See, there's a patriarchal thing. Why does he have say? Just because he puts you together and made the first
he was
album
our producer,
doesn't mean.
Our
doesn't
mentor,
mean
our
that
manager.
He, got...
he was everything.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, the band was sort of falling apart. The girls were shooting heroin, you know, and it was. And, you know, it was very. Oh, and speed, that was the worst.
Right.
So he went. They got arrested. So when he.
But conveniently, he also wanted you to move in with them and help take care of their children.
Well, I was the governess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was a job. They paid me.
So you did do that.
Yeah, for years.
For years.
Yeah.
The three kids.
Moon.
There were two at the time.
Moon and who else?
Moon and Dweezil.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
She's been there the whole every
Moon's
moment.
Moon's got a bunch of kids now too, doesn't she?
Moon has one daughter, Matilda.
I thought she had like two or three kids.
Yeah, one.
That's so awesome.
Dweezil has two.
And Dweezil and Zap and Ahmet are not talking or something.
Yeah.
It goes round and round and round.
Yeah,
something about the studio. Alex Winter tried to get me involved in something.
Has to do with the estate. And
did he not specifically say what's what in his will? Why is there
Gail.
So much fight?
It was Gail.
Oh.
Gail died 3 years ago.
So she didn't.
No, she did. And what she did, no one liked. So.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
I can't go into it. It's none of my beeswax.
Well, I get it. But, but I mean, it's pretty public. So
I spoke at her funeral. I was very, very close to her. She was a mentor to me just as much as Frank was.
Right.
Aww. She kept me, you know, I'd come home just weeping and wailing over Keith Moon or someone. And she would make me see the humor in it. She was really good with bringing me back out of him. I used to get my heart broken a lot, you know. But we all did at that age, right?
Did their house burn down? When did it burn? Did it burn down?
They had moved out.
Oh, they had?
Oh, yeah. Lady Gaga just bought their house up in Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, in the top.
Yeah, right. where
but Frank's the real
studio.
One is right at Laurel Canyon and
yeah, but
Lookout
it
Mountain
burned
Drive.
Down. It burned, I mean, probably within 2 years after they moved, and it's never been rebuilt.
See, the history of Laurel Canyon's really, you know, because you have to live there to hear every story from somebody who knows. I mean, you
yeah.
know a lot of it.
Yeah, I do.
But the window where Joni Mitchell is looking outside
yeah.
the window
oh,
during
yeah,
the
sure.
album cover.
There's
several
books about it.
Everywhere you go, a different house represents not one history, three
yeah.
histories. Old Hollywood, Robert
Old
Mitchum
Hollywood,
got arrested
yeah.
here for pot,
yeah.
and then the monkeys moved in.
No, that's true.
Old, but here's Charlie Chaplin's house.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's
Houdini's
thing.
House.
Yeah, yeah. But that was right across from yeah. Zappa's house, yeah. which belonged to Tom Mix, the cowboy.
Oh, wow.
It was a full log cabin.
Why do you figure one of the things I tried to figure out when I've been on some of these estates, what the hell? Why did they were 10 miles from the beach. What made them put the stuff in this little canyon? It's so weird to me.
I know. Isn't it strange?
I think it was because it was close to Hollywood. So
yeah,
one of the
right
things.
Off the strip,
yeah, but
right
then,
off
why,
the
then
strip.
Why not the hill facing Hollywood? Why
so
in the canyon?
You'll know.
In the canyons, it's just. I mean, think about that Chaplin house. It's in a hillside in a dark corner of the canyon.
I know.
It's so weird.
It was
Southern
very
California.
Arty. Very arty. It was a.
There was a lot of pot
communal,
going on there.
It was cheaper, too.
Communal. Scene, you know, everybody was creative.
It was outside the city limits for one thing. Yeah. It wasn't
oh, so
within
they could,
the city.
They could do stuff. Oh, okay.
That was
well, that
one
explains
thing.
A little
That's
bit.
That's the Robert Mitchum Houdini era.
Yeah. What does
so,
that mean?
they could do drugs.
Pot was super illegal.
Yeah, it was super illegal.
So one day I'm looking to get a bigger house. The house was small, and there was this house for rent. I go to it, and it's you'll know when you're coming up Laurel Canyon from Sunset. You know that white house that seems like it's on stilts, right as you come around
By the store by,
before or? Lookout Mountain between the store and Lookout.
Yeah,
if you look
yeah.
up, there's a weird yeah. white wooden house.
Yeah.
So I go to look at it. It's Leadbelly's original home. Leadbelly lived in Laurel Canyon.
Who's Leadbelly?
One of the greatest songwriters who ever lived. He wrote Goodnight Irene.
Blues
guy.
Nice.
And so it's just multi-generational.
Well, then as you go up the hill and over and look out, now you've got Sharon Tate and all this other stuff going on, right? Isn't that what happened?
That's Beverly Hills.
But isn't that what happened?
Beverly Hills.
Where were you that day?
That was Charles Manson.
I know. Did you know him? You must have known him.
I didn't know him. He was a phony. He was a pretend hippie.
I know, but did you ever
wanted to have sex with young girls, and he pretended to be a hippie, you know. And
did you ever see him at parties or see him around?
No. I knew Bobby Beausoleil. That's as close as I got. God. I used to make out with him in San Francisco.
That's so sad.
And then he killed people. It was like, what? That guy must have had such incredible power. He was a hypnotist as well, I believe. That's what I think.
Well, he was a... He was psychotic, and he was knew how to prey on the right people, and he was a persuasion expert. You know? That's hypnosis.
Yeah.
And so,
but, you know, that's people say he ended the 60s. That in Altamont, which I happened to be there with Mick.
Were you scared? That's what I was going to
Well, tell them what happened.
That's what I was going to end with.
Well, were you scared? Sure non-Californians know.
What's Altamont?
See,
I was too young.
Was a free concert the Rolling Stones were going to give after Woodstock had happened. Like a California version of Woodstock.
And they used the Hell's Angels for their security.
Yes,
I don't think they planned on it. Okay, it kind of evolved into that.
No, they hired them.
They hired them?
Yeah. Because because they thought...
Whose idea was that? Jerry Garcia's idea?
No, I think it was actually the Stones' idea. They were naive about who they really were.
Oh, my God.
So
that makes sense to me.
So they, you know, they... I stayed for the burritos. That's how much Keith loved Graham.
Right.
He let the burritos play. I saw them.
The Dead played, too.
Did you see the Dead? I left.
You were scared?
Because such bad vibes.
Bad vibes.
I could feel the vibes.
Was the vibe between the Hell's Angel and the audience?
Just the
audience was
and
already.
Hell's Angels
and heroin had arrived in San Francisco about a year and
Probably.
A half earlier.
I mean, I never used heroin.
I'm so curious. I've not heard this described before. Was the audience felt unruly, or did it feel – what was that?
It was tense. It was really tense, and for me to leave before the Stones even came on, you can imagine how bad it
was. Too big a crowd for the venue?
It was outside.
Yeah,
the crowd wasn't too big, but the Hell's Angels were pushing everyone around.
Okay.
They were taking speed and drinking and getting more physical.
And they thought they were big shots being hired by
the
Stones.
So
they pushed.
That's a woman that don't give a fuck right there.
So they were pushing us all around, and one of them threw a beer on me, and I had a really gorgeous outfit on because I'm going to see Mick, right? So I left. I just hitchhiked out of there, and I called Mick.
Was there anybody leaving there?
No.
How hard was it to get a ride?
Well, people were passing by. A couple people probably felt the vibes like I did because I got a ride to the Stones Hotel. I waited around until I thought the gig would be over, and I called him. And he said, you better come right up here. And that's when I heard what happened. I didn't know.
He already knew that the guy got killed?
Yeah.
The guy got killed.
Stabbing.
Right in front of them.
By the Hell's Angels.
No, it wasn't a Hell's Angel.
Oh, was it?
It was just a drunk jerk.
Wait, I think I've seen the video of the Hell's Angel guy doing this.
It's not a Hell's Angel. I really don't believe. Huh? No.
But the guy supposedly had a gun. And then that's in when Mick Jagger, there's a moment where Mick Jagger is watching that footage that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out if the guy really has a gun.
Yeah. Mm.
And you just see this, like, what the fuck has this become?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That I'm watching videotape to see if the guy really was trying to shoot me.
Or, I know.
You know, how did it go from free love 2 years ago to this fucking shit?
The 70s. Well, 70s, baby. That's it, Bob. I've been telling you all along. Now you with me?
That day, I walked in this room. It was Graham and Keith kind of leaning into each other. They'd already started turning into each other. And the Stones, a couple roadies, and Michelle Phillips. That's the only people in the room. And I just walked in and I went, oh, my God, what has happened? And then Mick told me what happened. And he said, I can't do this anymore. I have to quit, hang this up. I'm going to quit. I mean, it was so music because the idea was
the guy with the gun was going to kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was just too. It was just all the fact that anyone died there was so outlandish at the time and so unparalleled, you know.
So how did everybody regroup and
move on? Yeah,
now
we just have mass shootings at these events. We don't really care. One stabbing. What's the big deal? What's
That's
the big
horrible.
Deal?
That's horrible.
Now we have guys open with automatic weapons. I mean, think about that.
I know. Let's think about Las Vegas for a second. Oh. I don't want people to ever forget that. Friends of mine were on the crew
just
there.
It was awful.
One guy described to me, he felt like you were in one of those shooting games where you're trying to run. Where do you run to? Like the paintball thing.
I know.
Like where, and you're just seeing people laying on the ground dead around you. And that's now common. But in 1969 or 70, Mick Jagger was contemplating quitting playing music because if one person got stabbed.
Yeah.
That's he probably crazy. Changed his venue after that or had a better.
Well, it was outside. You know, I've got to give Mercy some credit here. Mercy does tarot cards. My girl,
Miss
the GTOs.
Mercy is one of the GTOs.
Yeah. She
was one of the reasons why the GTOs never made a second record.
Yes, she is.
She's paranoid.
She is, but I love her anyway.
Yeah, we love her.
We were hanging out with the Stones one night at their rental house. Peter Tork rented him a house in Laurel Canyon. And
Peter Tork
they were,
monkeys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought his name was York. Sorry.
And we were sitting around the fire, and I was dancing with Mick to Beggar's Banquet. He was playing it for the first time. Anyway, she read their tarot cards. She read Keith's tarot cards. And it came up the tower at the end. And she said, something's going on that you guys probably should know about. She said, are you planning any kind of anything secretive coming up that people don't know about or something you're doing? And Keith said, well, yeah, we're doing Altamont. We're doing a free concert. People don't know about that yet. It's free. She said, I don't think you should do that. It's true.
See, the heroin addicts know, Drew.
Keen survival instincts.
Yes.
And he said, it's all in my diary, so I remember it very vividly. He said, oh, it's too late. We have to do that. We're doing that.
And then
did Mercy go with you? She didn't go.
No, she didn't.
She didn't go. See? And there was free dope there, and she didn't go.
Who knows what she was doing? She was with Al Green in those days.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Really?
Oh, yeah. She loved the Soul Brothers.
So, yes, she did.
Elvis? You had time with Elvis, too?
No, I did not. I saw him play, but I could have. That's one of my regrets. I could have been with Elvis. But I had just met Michael, and I was engaged for the first time. Second time, but the first one didn't count. And Larry Geller, Elvis's hairdresser and spiritual guidance guy, called and said, Elvis wants some girls to come hang out and watch TV with tonight.
That's what he used to say. But apparently...
Susan, would you have gone?
Probably.
Yeah, she would have gone.
I would have gone.
But he apparently was kind to them when they got there.
Yeah.
They didn't want to watch TV, or they wanted to watch TV.
He never pressured anyone. Yeah. He never had to.
He was Elvis.
Right.
But anyway, a friend of mine went in my place, and she had a really lovely time. And like you said, nothing untoward happened. But I thought, the way I felt about Elvis, that it would.
Yeah. Because
and
of you.
And I was... engaged to Michael, so I said no. So I regret this.
Did not let the train leave the station.
If you were single, it would have been different.
Yeah.
Well, later I told Michael about it. He said, what the fuck were you thinking? I would have gone.
Your husband.
Yes. You know, we are.
It's the 70s, Drew.
We are Elvis fanatics, Michael and I both. Yeah.
He has a radio show. I was
Yes.
On.
Michael great. Wanted me to tell you he'd love to be on your show.
Oh, yeah. We should have him. He's
he has 5 million followers on that show.
Let's do it. Amazing.
Is it a podcast or radio?
No, it's a radio.
No, he's on XM.
Radio show.
He's on Little Stevens Underground. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's the greatest.
Okay, next.
Yeah, sure. Michael DeBars. Detective. First album, Detective.
Silverhead,
bought it.
Man.
Well, I didn't know
Silverhead
about Silverhead, but
best.
I bought the first album, the Detective album, because it was on
Swanton
Records.
Oh, boy.
Which is Led Zeppelin's label.
That's how long I knew them. I knew them for so long. I still know Robert, but Jimmy, no one knows him anymore.
Why?
You know. Well, he disappears. He's completely isolated. Have you seen him lately? mean,
he's in his own world. I mean,
they have really young girlfriends still.
Yeah, he does have a 19-year-old girlfriend.
No, she's in her 20s. Oh, okay. She She is.
The poet girl?
I don't know. She's a beautiful Brazilian yeah. girl.
He may
I guess.
Just want to avoid public scrutiny for all that.
Yeah. But I think that there was no – see, to be a doctor, your life is mapped out for you. Mm-hmm. There was no roadmap for what these musicians were doing.
The whole thing
right?
was
– Oh, it was so brand new.
And then
– So brand new.
And then it hasn't ended. And I keep thinking
it
like
–
It hasn't ended because the people that started after them, say the Sex Pistols, Steve Jones, friend of ours – The first generation hasn't stopped yet, so they're just all following. Like, how do you age gracefully as a rock musician? Nobody's really said how to do
it. But you look at Mick Jagger. You look at
he hasn't stopped doing what he's doing.
I know Bruce Springsteen, the Eagles. These people are my age, and they're doing it, man.
But they're doing it for people our age. You know what I mean?
No.
But there's not a beginning. There's not a beginning, middle, and end.
They're all ages. I have so many of my young girls. They'll go see Paul McCartney. They'll save up their money.
Yeah,
you
the
know.
Paul McCartney played Coachella. It was crazy.
It's all ages. All yeah, ages. All see ages. These
but
people.
You understand
they
there
make
was...
more money than any of the younger acts.
But most people, yeah. like your friend Jim Morrison, your friend Jim Morrison, said, this is just a fad. It's going to It's going well, on 50 years later.
No, he didn't. He never said it was a fad.
Yeah, but it's just
he said to him, it didn't mean that much. And he was a poet. And that's what I saw him right before he went to France. And I had just done this commercial interview and I sucked real bad. And I was walking down La Cienega and he pulled up in front of me in a driveway in a convertible with a couple other dudes. He still had his beard and everything, but he looked a lot better. And he said, I'm going to France. I am going to write that book I told you I was going to write. I'm going, my life's going to change. He was so happy.
What's the book you wanted to write?
His poetry. Just it was poetry. Yeah.
Did he publish much?
No, he died of heroin overdose.
He
there.
Was there 2 months or something. Not even was it? I mean, it was a tragedy, man. I visited his grave a couple times.
Me too.
Yeah.
And me and you and about 50 million other people.
Are people always there when you go?
Yeah, he's buried in France.
No, I know. He's got Paris, his bust is there and everything.
Yeah.
Well,
bottles are there.
It's in that crazy crowded. Parisian.
Yeah, where Baudelaire is. Yeah. And Rimbaud.
But, you know, he's the only one in the entire huge cemetery that has to have 24-hour cameras on it.
Oh, really?
I mean, you know.
Yeah, and they have spray painted, like, where you go.
Yeah.
I mean,
everybody's been there.
Yeah, I know. God bless him.
Yeah, but...
He thought he was going off to a better life.
So, in the end, I know that one thing I've learned, I thought I knew everything about you. You're a Mick Jagger girl. I'm a Keith Richards guy. I use Keith Richards as my role model. He just recently stopped smoking and drinking. I mean, this is crazy. He's 76 years old.
No, he's very inspiring.
Hope. It gives me
but
hope.
But he has great genetics. Come on.
Oh, God.
Not just great because of genetics. He was designed in the lab. I mean, like, something we need to, like, figure out what's going on there.
And he does give me hope anytime. Oh, you know, because I got young kids. I got to make it to 76 at least.
Of course you will.
Yes.
And you're finally feeling great again.
I am feeling good. Yeah. I think it's because I'm taking this. We used to have this sponsor called Bergamot. And
He thinks it's all the bergamot.
And he started giving it to me, so I took it. And I'm feeling better and better, and I think it's because of that. And he tells me, it's because your hep C's cleared up from the Harvoni, and now you're feeling better.
Yeah. Of
and
course.
I was like, that's the bergamot.
I have so many friends who've been cleared with hep C. Mercy.
Oh, so you've gotten a lot of friends, right?
Yeah,
and do they report feeling like they're amazing?
Yeah, Mercy's
that's how
doing
I feel
great, yeah.
recently.
Well,
we
can
all
I
survive.
Hype myself on
yes.
I just, you know, at PamelaDebar.com, you can find out everything I'm doing.
Where's your next writer's retreat?
I'm going, the next one's Austin and Chicago, and then Tulsa.
Look at this.
Do you ever
New
go
Orleans
to,
and Nashville.
Do you ever go to university programs and...
No, these girls are girls more like me. I don't know. I speak at university sometimes. Mm. People are fascinated with my history and can't even believe that I did those things. You can't do them these days. You know?
Apparently you can't. Who would you do? There's nobody worth doing.
I agree, except, you know, if I was younger, I would have gone after Jack White about 10 years ago. Big time.
There you go. There you go. There's only one rock star in the last 30 years of Jack White. I do say that. He really is a rock star.
Yeah, he is.
Flash.
He's the most recent one. And then before him, it was Kurt Cobain, really, I think.
Were you sexually attracted to him? Not really. He wasn't sexual, Kurt.
No, he was very cerebral, but I would have done him back
Jack
then.
Jack is sexual.
But Kurt was...
Yeah, he is.
He's pretty. He's pretty.
Yeah, I would be attracted to him. And also, I think Eminem was a very important. You know, to me, the people who reflect their audience and who remind their audience of who they are and how they're feeling is the great art. That's why Dylan is my god. You know, he started that, in my opinion. So you know, if someone doing music or art or anything does that, opens someone's solar plexus up, then they are important.
Are you doing other art besides writing?
Teaching. I do rock and roll tours. I'm doing one tomorrow. I take a van out with the driver, and I take everybody all to all the places I did all this wild shit.
Oh my god! That could be a huge thing.
And tell my stories. I've been doing it for 10 years.
But I mean,
$125 for the day.
Yeah.
How big's the van?
I usually take a dozen people.
I could see where people would.
I get one of those. Yeah, because there's nothing like it.
Nothing, and all those the ones
is that
you
on
see,
your website that you might get some more customers.
The ones you see driving all over Hollywood are just ridiculous.
Do you stand
out in front of the whiskey, telling stories of what happened to me in that room? I mean, it's unbearable. I saw the Who there, Hendrix. Everyone you can imagine, Zeppelin, in
doors,
that tiny room.
Doors.
Well, they, many times, yeah. But
yeah, see, the doors are like nothing to her.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, I saw them
30 Who's the high school
times,
band?
30 times. 40 times. They played my high school. But
right. Oh, really?
But
where was your high school?
Cleveland High in Reseda.
Reseda.
Where I live now. I can walk to it.
Wow.
I thought my mark of distinction was at Van Halen. I saw them at a prom.
Oh, right, Pasadena. Mammoth. They were called Mammoth then, were they?
No, they were Van Halen.
They were called Van Halen?
But then no David Lee Roth.
Anyway, while I'm standing out there telling them how I finally got a hold of Mick, whatever you want to call it, down there at the whiskey under the table, there are people driving by saying, here's the Whiskey Go-Go. And I say, you have no idea.
Hell, the tour? Another tour?
The TMZ bus.
Well, these days they're going to jump out with the camera. And
we got to go. I got to go on that.
Well, please.
Did
do.
You ever go to the? Did you know the Seeds very well?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so they had a house on supposedly on Fountain and Gardner.
I'm sure
that was the Thelonious Monster house, and then we're living there for years.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden somebody said,
"Did you know
the Seeds used to live here?" And I was like, "Were they drug addicts?"
Have you seen Bob's the documentary about Bob? You would really like it.
No, I would probably love it.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Yeah.
When
did
that happen?
Like 4 years ago, 5 years
Bob
ago?
Bob and the Monster, it's called. It's really, but it's
about
it's
music
LA
and
history.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
And,
okay, I would love to see
that. Yeah, I'll get it for you.
Okay, you know, Mike Stinson, my ex, is such a huge fan of yours.
Oh, I love him.
He would love this.
He's playing in my yard. I have gigs in my yard, too. He's playing on May 4th in my
May
4th
his at
birthday
your house?
Gig.
Okay.
I'll remind you.
Remind me.
I will.
All right,
Reseda is a hard roll. I'm at Claremont. You know where Claremont is?
No.
That's where it's in Pomona.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well, that's not too far from here, right? I'm so turned around.
It's like
further than Reseda.
Is it? Oh, it is? Yeah. Oh, okay.
But we'll try to go bring the kids.
Okay.
We'll go.
Yes, you can. It's afternoon. Yeah. It's I'll an afternoon it. Thing.
Oh, thank you so much for driving over here and doing this.
Thank you,
guys.
About your book and where they can
I'm with the band.
I'm with
this is
the
my
band.
First book. I'm now writing my sixth book. They are all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everywhere.
Podcast, Miss Pamela's Pajama Party.
Miss Pamela's Pajama Party.
Got to see that.
And the tour.
Miss
Where do you
Mercy's
get the tour?
My first guest.
Where do you get the tour?
It's all on my website.
Okay.
Miss Mercy, the tarot card reader?
Yes. Oh, she's around. We spent New Year's Eve together.
She's my first guest.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. Susan, you're looking at that. Sounds like,
maybe
sounds like
Miss
something.
Mercy should be my role model.
Yeah.
She could be. She's still alive. It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
I'll let you wrap it up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, fam.
This is the world I live in, exciting and vibrant and alive. And, you know, I just love it. Music is losing its center to people's lives.
That makes me sad. It breaks my heart.
And when I reconnect with someone who I know loves music as much as I do, it's just crazy. Or I talked about the psychedelic furs with you. He's kind of stuck. He's kind of stuck from 1981 to 1985.
I'm not. I like that stuff.
He loves it.
He does. We all love music.
Yeah, but I don't think people like music as much as we do.
They don't.
It's not as important in people's lives because the phones have taken over and the internet and there's computers and their iPads.
Meaningless information has taken over instead of soul connection.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. You mean you don't like my friend Cardi B?
You do like her a lot.
I do like her. Although recently we found out she's a criminal.
Yeah, I'm sure she's
drugging men and robbing them when she was a
stripper in New York. What do you think goes on there, Drew?
Oh boy.
All right, till next time. Right. See you later.
Bye.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Thanks for listening and subscribing on your favorite platforms. Rate us 5 stars and tell a friend. Also, be sure to visit drdrew.com for the latest news. We'll tell you where you can find all of our health-related content, including the latest in-depth series, The History of Opium. You can now listen to it on the weekly Infusion podcast. We have some great and very interesting and appropriate interviews with key historical players in the history of opium. We're excited about our newest podcast, Dr. Drew After Dark, which has been described as a dark web reboot of Loveline. It's the hottest guest spot for all the most popular comedians. Beware, it is for a mature audience. It is kind of a reboot of Loveline. You can hear the episodes first in a podcast form Thursday. Then on Friday, you can watch all the video episodes when the YouTube page drops on the Your Mom's House YouTube channel. New episodes every week. Subscribe, tell a friend. Also on Dr.com, you can find Swole Patrol, our health and fitness podcast with Mike Catherwood. If you want something a bit more refined that will expand your intellectual horizons, please subscribe to the Dr. Drew podcast, where I feature a wide variety of very interesting and important guests. Get in-depth interviews there. Last but not least, me and Adam and Dr. Drew Show podcast. It's a lot of fun, and we are still together, and you can get it 5 days a week. So go to drdrew.com. Please tell a friend, and we thank you for it.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.